This episode of the Mighty Parenting Podcast is sponsored by the Great Courses Plus. And the Great Courses Plus is something that my family and I love. We are curious and it helps us expand our curious minds. It can help you build on skills, enhance your knowledge of the world. It's just such an amazing resource for me and my family. It was designed for lifelong learners of all ages. So it's a streaming service that provides access to thousands of fascinating fact-based lectures. And those lectures are taught by world-leading professors and experts. And they explore topics from history, literature, science, all the way to hobbies and leisure, exercise, and so much more. So they cover things like how to paint or cook, how to learn a new language, even tips for training your dog. So if you got caught in the puppy pandemic, they've got a solution for you. There are courses for every age and curiosity. They have a special section for high school or college students, although my college students are loving things across the board. And it also have things for people who just want to learn for the fun of it. The information is available on your computer, but they also have a Great Courses app. So it's super easy to watch or listen anytime, anywhere. You can use your phone, your tablet, or an internet-connected TV to access the courses. Now, I have been checking out a course on raising emotionally and socially healthy kids, which I think you guys might enjoy. If you enjoy the podcast, I think you'd learn a lot and really appreciate the wisdom in that one. You and your family can continue your journey as lifelong learners simply by signing up for the Great Courses Plus, and they're offering my listeners an entire month for free. So you can get on there, check it out, see what's in there, and find out how you can satisfy your curiosity. So don't wait. Go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/mightyparenting, and that is where you will find the 1 month free. So again, that's thegreatcoursesplus.com/mightyparenting. After you get your membership, go in, check it out, and let me know. Let me know what you're listening to, what you're watching, and what you think of it.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm Sandy Fowler, stress relief coach, emotional wellness speaker, host of the Mighty Parenting podcast, and co-founder of MightyParenting.com. As parents, we want to raise good kids who become good adults. And of course, we want our boys to be good men. But we also know there are a million ways those plans can get derailed. And I hear mother boys talking about this often. My mother-in-law talks about it after raising four boys. And they say that, you know, one day they wake up and their wonderful sons are just suddenly, well, let's say, not someone they really want to hang out with, not so pleasant to be around. Well, today's guest is Kara Kinney Cartwright. Kara has two sons, and she was bound and determined to raise them to be good guys. Well, as they got older, she saw some things happening, maybe didn't see some things happening, and decided to help not only her and her boys, but the rest of us. And she created a guidebook of unwritten rules for being a good guy called Just Don't Be an Asshole, Surprisingly Necessary Guide to Being a Good Guy. Kara, welcome to Mighty Parenting.
Thank you so much, Sandy.
So, Kara, you know, the book title, of course, caught my attention when a publisher sent it to me, and I read it, and I really appreciated what you did. But I have to ask, I mean, you know, keeping this a family-friendly show, I'm going to be switching the word in the title to be, we're going to use the word jerk. But it was interesting to me when I read your book, and I've seen you online, and yes, you used profanity in the title and throughout the book. But it feels like that was a very deliberate decision. Am I right in that?
Yes, you're absolutely right. The title actually was the brainchild of my editor, and his children are younger than mine. And as he sort of saw what was coming down the pike at him, he had this brainstorm of a book that sort of captures the frustration of being a parent of adolescents, and also the simplicity of the one thing we want them to know before they are launched out into the world. And also, you know, there comes a point raising teenage sons, I found, maybe this isn't true of everyone, where you sort of transition from worrying about their self-esteem and thinking about how they're impacting the people around them. And, you know, for me, it was, you know, we were in a restaurant somewhere and my two sons were just absolutely cracking each other up and having a good time together, but completely unaware that anyone else existed in the restaurant. And I turned to them and I said, "Hey, Beavis and Butthead, everyone here hates you. Simmer down." So, you know, as a parent of toddlers, I never would have thought I would speak to my own children in that way. But there are certain moments in adolescence where you're really just trying to get their attention for 1 second. And sometimes the shock value helps in that, I think.
Well, it's interesting because you're right. The shock value helps, the humor. And I know you commented on that too in the book that, you know, you're using humor. And I think because the book is actually written for the kids, this is not a book for the parents. This is a book for, you know, teen boys, even 20 something boys. And little story here. So I have this book sitting on the coffee table in our living room because I'm reading it. My husband walks in, he does a double take. And he's like, "What?" He looked at me, he's like, "Are you trying to tell me something? Are you having problems?" And I'm like, "Well, it's a book that was sent to me for potential show guests. So I'm reading it." And he picked it up and he kept picking it up because, you know, it takes me a little while to get through a book for a show, right? And it was staying on the coffee table and he kept picking it up. And next thing I know, he's showing it to one of my girls. And what dawned on me is that regular listeners know my husband's on the spectrum. And I think that he was so taken with this straightforward, black and white, no punches pulled, here are the social rules, people. Like, this is how the world functions. And I think that as parents, as a society, we forget that we need to actually teach these things to our kids. There's a certain amount when they're little, but when they're older, it's like we just expect them to pick everything up, or it just doesn't even occur to us to talk to them about all these different ways of behaving in the world. Or if we're talking to them, it's the deep conversations. We don't start with super basic concepts like you did in the book.
Yeah. And thank you for sharing that with me. And that feedback is really similar to what I'm hearing from other parents now that the book is out in the world, is that, you know, it's the cover is irresistible. So that it's the sort of book that will catch, hopefully, catch your teenager's eye. They'll want to know what it's about. And then the messages are so short and so direct that it's the sort of thing they can dip in and out of and maybe, you know, pick up a thing here, pick up a thing there, and, you know, hopefully become engaged with it and keep coming back to it. So, but you're right about those heart-to-hearts happening, I think, at a younger age, because for me, there was a moment when I realized that, I don't know how this snuck up on me, but somehow it did. My sons graduated high school and college in the same week. And so there's just a moment of, or there was for me, of realization that your time is becoming really limited with your kids, and that the issues and challenges they're facing as they grow more independent are greater, but your time to communicate with them about dealing with those issues has become much smaller because they're living their own lives. They're busy. They're going to school. Maybe they're playing sports. They have other activities with their friends. And so in my experience raising teenagers, you often only get a little snippet of time. So for me, I've just found it was helpful to be very direct and precise. And if I could be loud enough or funny enough to get their attention long enough to finish my sentence, then success. That was our communication for the day.
I love that, loud enough or funny enough. And I just do want to give parents a heads up that there is profanity through the book. So if you have a problem with that, if you don't want your kid exposed to that, then that is not the best choice. But I found that it was used in a way that was to kind of help get and keep the kid's attention. Mm-hmm. And it, whether that's something your child necessarily does or not, you know, they hear it in the world and they know, you know, what your thoughts are on it. And so sometimes it is that shock value, that shock mm-hmm. factor. But the other thing about this book is you were talking about, you know, the time that we have to talk to our kids is more limited as they get older. I think too, that plays into when we have that time with our kids, we don't always want to be trying to impart lessons and always mm-hmm. trying to tell them what they should and shouldn't do. And that we actually want that time for a deeper, more meaningful connection rather than this. So the book kind of reminded me of when my girls were little and I got them the whole, you know, care and keeping of you book.
Yes.
And it was something that they could just read. And so, yes, we had some conversations, but I didn't have to go through how to use a Q-tip. Mm-hmm. That was something that was covered just fine in the book. And I could keep my conversations with them to the things that either they felt they had more curiosity about, or they needed more information on, or that I thought were important, or that there's a more of a values thing behind. And that was kind mm-hmm. of what your book reminded me of, was a little more hands-off way of getting the message across to them.
I appreciate that. And I think that's exactly right, that as your kids are growing older and you spend less time with them, it's very important to not just let it happen. You need to be intentional about how you spend it. And so as a family, you know what you think are your key values and your most important lessons. And those are the ones that I think you want to, you have to choose your battles with your teenagers, right? So you want to really focus on the core lessons that you want to make sure your vision really of how your sons are going to be men in the world. And those are the things that you want to spend your time on. And if you've, you know, if you've put your time into making sure that your son wore a helmet since he was 4 years old, when he leaves the house with his skateboard when he's 17, you could just say, "I love your brain." And he knows that you mean to wear your helmet. You don't really have to get into the statistics and scare them about the emergency room and go over all that. You've done that work. And so you can spend your time having those bigger conversations about bigger issues.
Well, we've talked about values in the conversations. And when you talk about values in the book, you talk about translating values into specific do's and don'ts. Mm-hmm. Would you elaborate on that?
I think it's so important to meet our kids where they are and to give them the tools, the words, and the actions that they need to do the right thing in a difficult moment. Because when they're facing a tough choice, say in a peer group situation, that's not the time where they need to be writing their own script. If they already have it, it'll be much easier for them to do the right thing. And so when we say things to our teenagers like, you know, be kind or respect women, they may not know what that means in any particular situation. So to the extent that you can anticipate the real world situations that they're facing now, and now includes online, right? Because many of their peer communications are happening on screens. If we can sort of give them the tools to say no, or to steer the group away from, say, a bullying activity, or to check out of something the minute they see it's going the wrong way, or to support a peer when they need it, even though it might be uncomfortable to acknowledge that vulnerability. If we can give them the words and the actions that they need in those moments, I think they'll be much better served than by us reminding them of platitudes.
And that can go to some of those conversations that we have with them. Instead of it just being an instructional moment, mm-hmm. it can be that bigger or deeper conversation about values. And then at that time, talk about, well, what do you think you could do in this moment? And then you can go to the book and go, well, here are some of Kara's thoughts. What others can we add to that? And so that's kind of, it reminds us that we need to have those conversations, but we need to have them in a way where we give our kids concrete help.
I agree. And I hope the book will help families to begin to have those conversations. It's a tool, right? It's another tool. I've seen, I've had moms online saying, you know, I saw my son reading this book and I said, what part are you reading? Well, what do you think about that? And so I hope it will create space to have those conversations so that you can, you know, get some feedback on things that your children are facing. And like you said, their ideas for how they would handle it. And then perhaps some suggestions from you as to, you know, give them some additional ideas.
And we've talked about our sons here. What do you want parents of girls to know?
I think the key lesson in this book is, and let's be honest, it's not, I didn't invent it. It's the golden rule. Treat other people as you would like to be treated. And by the way, all people are people, right? So we don't treat some people the right way and other people a different way. We treat everyone as a human being with the respect that a human being deserves. And so I think that lesson in empathy applies for everyone. And so although, you know, I speak teenage boy because I raised teenage boys, we're a boy house here. I hope that anyone picking it up would be able to take away that message of empathy and caring for others.
I love that. It's just empathy and caring for others. And that reminded me, I had at the beginning of the book, you had this cute little chart you made where you did like cluelessness on the bottom axis and happiness on the vertical axis. And then you had three bars. And so you had, okay, total jerk is lots of cluelessness and a little bit of happiness. And good guy was lots of happiness, only a tiny bit of cluelessness. But you also had in between, just like mm-hmm. not a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of want to know, you know, what your thought is, like, what's the difference? I mean, we get what a jerk is. But what's your definition, your difference between not a jerk and a good guy?
Right. So I think many people buying this book, or many boys reading this book, they don't self-identify as a jerk, right? So
hopefully,
so, you know, I think most people are right there in the middle. And part of what I wanted to achieve is to show boys how easy it is to just move up to that good guy level, right? So, you know, you're in the middle, you're not actively disrespecting other people, you're not causing drama, you're staying in your lane, but maybe you're going along with the crowd and you sort of know in your heart that the crowd is not going the right way. Or maybe you have a friend who's a jerk and you find that funny. And so you choose to stand by when he's doing his jerk stuff. It's not that far of a jump to jump out of that middle column into the good guy column. And so part of what I wanted to do is not just to say, you know, I don't want you to go out in the world being a jerk, of course, but I want my own sons to be the good guy in the group. I want them to be the one who set the standard for doing the right thing for the people around them. And so I wanted to give them the tools to be able to do that and to see the difference between, you know, standing there and doing nothing and doing a small thing that really is to the benefit not only of yourself, because you feel good when you do the right thing, but also let other people see you doing it, and then they feel good and they want to do it too. And so, you know, I'm hoping to help folks to step up to the next level.
And I think that's an important nuance when we talk to our kids, boys, girls. I think it's a very important thing to talk about. Hey, there's a continuum in our lives. Mm-hmm. There's doing a terrible, awful thing, but then there are levels beyond that. And how can we take steps to make us a really good person, someone who is very caring and kind and considerate of others, not just not mean and abusive to others.
That's right. And I think we have to share with our children that we're working on it too, right? So teenage boys, I found in my experience, have highly developed hypocrite detectors. And so I'm sure you can imagine that as I was writing this book, that my sons had some advice for me throughout the whole process. And I, you know, I think it's important to acknowledge that and to say, it's hard to be brave and do the right thing. Like, it could end up being embarrassing. If it can get your heart going when you know you're about to say something to someone and you don't know how they're going to react, or you're offering help to someone and you don't know if that person will receive it well or not. These are hard things for adults. These are not teenager problems. These are human problems. And I think we need to be transparent about that with our kids, that yes, it's easy to step up to the next level and you should do it, but this isn't just for you. It's for everyone. We all are working on it all the time.
And that kind of takes me back to that thought about, you know, what do we want our girls to know? And one, as you said, these are human problems. So there's mm-hmm. an awful lot in here that directly applies to any human being. And for pieces that are more specifically boy oriented, I like the idea of having the conversation with my daughters about what are you looking for in friends or in potential partners, and also that concept of looking for more than just not being a jerk, but mm-hmm. actually a good guy. Not that they have to have gotten there 100% yet. As you said, none of us are. You know, we're all a work in progress. We're learning. But what are you seeing? What are this person's values? How are they actually living them out? And I think that's a great conversation to be able to have with our teens and our 20-somethings especially. You know, they graduate high school and they start moving on, and thing relationships become more about long term. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a key conversation, is, well, what do you want in a partner?
I love that. And I hope it is helpful in that way. I hope it is helpful. That's terrific.
When you wrote the book or after, I'm kind of curious, you know, you mentioned that the boys were privy to this as you were writing it, mm-hmm. they read it after. Was there something from the book that really resonated with your family, or where maybe the boys called you out and went, seriously, Mom? Like, what was kind of the big thing in your house about this book after it was done?
Oh, gosh. I would say, so for my younger son, who still lives with us, the part that annoyed him the most about the book was the very end of the book, where it's just a series of admonitions, right? Don't do this, don't do that, don't do the other thing. And so, you know, as I was working on that list, I asked him to look at it, and he said, I can't look at it. I am living it. This is my life. Like, I just can't. I can't do it. And then my older son, so he graduated college last spring, and he's, I'm happy to say, knock on wood, gainfully employed and living on his own with some roommates, which is all great. And so the less he lived with us as he sort of went through his college years and then ended up getting an apartment, the more generous he was with us, because I feel like that tension, that power play of sort of being in that parental role under the same roof, you get away from that a little bit, I feel like, as the kids become more independent. And so he was more generous, and he was able to say, I think there's actually some good advice in here. So that to me was just an absolute rave review. And he said, you know, I feel like you took a couple swipes at me in there, but I'm over it, he said. So everyone had veto power, you know, everyone in my family read it, and everyone was able to say, you know, you can't say this or you can't say that. There was one footnote that one of my sons asked me to take out because he felt it was too obvious that it was about his particular friends. But that was the only edit they asked me to make.
Well, so we're talking about, you know, teenage boys, and I can see them liking the book, but not wanting to say, oh yes, I like this book. Like, 'cause that's just not very cool or not very whatever.
Yeah, it's very hard. My younger son, the best thing he could say was, it was better than I thought.
Well, and you were posting some pictures of boys reading it. And to me, that's really kind of the thing, is are kids actually engaging with it? You know, does it give them what they want?
That's been amazing to me to see, because I wrote this book in the run-up to both of my sons' graduations last year. And so I really had a sense of sort of urgency about it. You know, did I tell them everything? Did we model everything we wanted them to be? Have we said out loud all of the things, like you said, you think you've covered it, but did you really? You know, it was sort of, in a way, my last gasp, last lecture parenting manifesto. So to me, in a way, it was quite personal. And so now seeing boys who are not related to me out there in the world reading it and sort of saying, and, you know, giving it some thought and maybe a chuckle or a snort here or there, or sticking with it and turning the pages, like that's really kind of amazing. So I'm excited by that. I'm glad it's resonating outside of my household.
Well, and I think that it's a combination of the attitudinal humor, the black and white nature of it, but also one of the things that it's a lesson, I think, that as parents we can get here is you don't put them down for doing the jerky things. You just encourage them to make better choices. And I'd like to know what you want to say to parents about doing that with our kids.
I think as parents, often our reflex is to sort of jump into, and I'm saying this for myself because this is my reflex, to jump into sort of an investigational mode. and even skip the investigation and jump straight into the accusational phase. And I think it's helpful if we want to have meaningful conversations about choices that our kids have made, to sort of put on their hat and think about all of the factors that went into that choice. We have to acknowledge the peer pressure that our teenagers are living with every minute of every day. We have to acknowledge the impact of online life and what that means for them, and the gaps in our understanding of what they're experiencing. We need to acknowledge the academic pressures that they're facing and the other outside pressures in addition to that. And so to take a moment and think about, you know, what brought us to this point, you know, and to hear our kids out on why they made a particular choice that we may think was a bad choice in the moment. And then to talk through, you know, to acknowledge, yes, I understand why you did that. I understand that everybody around you was doing X, Y, Z, and that you didn't see a safe way to get out of that in the moment. What are you going to do now? Like, are you going to keep company with these people? Are you going to try to steer your activities to a different something that works better, that's safer and kinder to others? Are you going to reach out to the person that you realize now that you hurt by making that choice? And what are you going to do to fix it? I think we have to acknowledge it's hard. It's hard to be a teenager. And so, and one of the toughest things as parents is to share that acknowledgement and understanding, and at the same time maintain high standards and try to ensure that our kids know not only what to do next time, but why it's important, and to try to convince them really to do the good guy thing when next time you have the opportunity.
I love that conversation, though, and where you said, you know, okay, I recognize that this is what was happening. This was what was going on in that situation. And what are you going to do about it now? Because I think oftentimes our kids or us, we are caught between a rock and a hard place. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's an emotional moment. Maybe we blow up. Maybe we say something we wouldn't have. Maybe we break down. But it's like you said, it's those pressures of the moment. And then after, there's just sometimes it just feels like there's regret or guilt or all mm-hmm. the bad feelings. But you're taking us a step past that and going, okay, so that happened there. What are you going to do about it now? How can you help yourself in the future? Or if there are amends to be made, what amends can you make?
Mm-hmm. I think that's important for all of us, right? So that's how many times do I walk out of a conversation and say, but having had the life experience of knowing that these things are not irreversible, I can go back and say, you know, we were just talking about this and I wish I had done this different way. And, you know, I hope you'll forgive me and we'll do the next thing. Teenagers may not have those skills. It may be hard for them to apologize. It may be hard for them to reflect on their behavior and then to sort of rewind it and go back and face it again. And so I think that's important. And I also think, as you just mentioned, it's important to look at why that happened, not only in terms of the external factors, but in terms of internal factors. You know, why are you acting like this? Like, you know, what's going on with you? Are you sleeping well? Are you eating well? Are you feeling ill? Are you spending too much time online? Like, what's going on with you that's making you feel boxed in this way? And what are you going to do to fix it?
I love that. So overall, I guess I would kind of sum this all up going, you know, we have limited time with teenagers. Their lives are busy. And there's still a lot of things that we want to teach them. And one way of doing that is by having the book, which also then allows the time that we do have to have the more meaningful connecting conversations that we want to have with them. And very important, you know, we as parents need to acknowledge when they are doing something that is jerky, when they are not making the best choices. We need to acknowledge what went into that and help them see past that with, okay, here, I hear, I understand it. I totally get it. And what are you going to do about it now? I appreciate all of that, Kara. I do appreciate the way that you have woven this all together for us as parents. The book is available in bookstores online and off. And if it's not sitting on the shelf in your local indie bookstore, I'm sure they can order it. I know ours gets us books within 2 days. Of course, I will add a link to our show notes so that you can order it online as well. And we'll have links so listeners can connect with you directly, Kara. I know you've,
Wonderful.
Yeah, you've covered an amazing array of topics for our kids, essentially created a checklist for us parents on, have we gone over this? Have we talked about this? Have we thought about this? And you've done it with humor and a little teen attitude. So thank you so much for your work there and for spending time with us today here on Mighty Parenting.
Oh, thank you, Sandy. That all means so much coming from you. I really appreciate it.
And Mighty Parents, thank you for being here. If you enjoyed the podcast, if you got anything out of it, please rate, review, and share it. The podcast is on all the major podcast players and a whole bunch of minor ones. Episodes are also available to stream and listen to directly online. Just go to mightyparenting.com, click on the podcast menu. The podcast in the menu bar. And if you're looking for a specific episode in the search box, you can put in a number or a guest name, or you can just peruse what's there, but then share those with other people so they can get the same benefit that you have. Thank you for joining us today and being part of the Mighty Parenting community. Remember that you are a mighty parent, so you got this. And I will see you next week.